Good evening. The point of our practice, very, very simply, is to see things completely. Material things and things that are hidden from sight and sound. To see everything completely without limitation. In other words, our practice is about giving up a one-sided view of life. When we first come to the practice, when we first feel some attraction or pull to come to the practice, it is because we understand in some way that we are only seeing part of life. We're only seeing one side of life. And we feel that it's really vital that we see everything, not just one side. We want to see all sides of life and all sides of ourself. When we see things just from one side, then we will tend to judge them, to be judgmental. And when that happens, we start to create categories of things. You know, the things we like, and then there are the things we don't like. The things that are good, and the things that we say are bad, and things that we say are special. And then there are the other things that we say not special. And this idea, this tendency to see things as either special or not special is a big problem for us human beings. Big problem. So when we see things only from one side and look for things that are special, we then want to believe in our own specialness. We want to feel that we are special in some way. And we may strive our whole life to obtain this feeling of being special. And sometimes our striving is very conscious, and with intention, as we say. We know what we're doing. We're trying to be special. And sometimes we are not aware of our striving. But either way, if striving to be special continues throughout our life, it throws us off balance. And we have a shaky feeling about life, and we don't know why. The quest for specialness, for admiration, for attention, throws us off balance. We really have a strong desire not to be a nobody. This is a very strong feeling, a desire not to be a nobody. But this is a misunderstanding. This is a misunderstanding of who we are and what misunderstanding about ourselves. Many years ago, when I became ordained as a monk, Suzuki Roshi gave me the robes, this one, and the less formal one called Roksu. Anybody wearing one tonight? Oh, so Carolina has one. Is Roksu? It's a less formal version of this. And could you turn it on? And on the back, your teacher, when he gives you that, writes something, your name and his name and date and so forth. So when Suzuki Roshi gave me two. One of them, after writing my name, he wrote the symbol, the kanji, Japanese symbol for a grain of sand. You know, these days we do those in English, but Suzuki Roshi did them in kanji, and kanji is not this way, not right to left, but it's vertical. So there was my name this way, and on the bottom, little symbol for grain of sand. And I thought, oh, he's trying to tell me something. He's trying to say, you're just a grain of sand. Don't let this ordination ceremony make you think you are something special. You're a grain of sand. And a further meaning of that symbol was that don't get carried away. Keep your humility. Grain of sand. And the other one of these he gave me, his name is also on those. And so at the end of his name, bottom of his name, he wrote the kanji for somebody. Suzuki Shunryu somebody. And that was his title. He didn't say teacher. He didn't say Zen master. He didn't say abbot. He didn't say anything like that. Somebody, meaning nobody. His meaning, practice is nothing special. You and I are nothing special. Don't see things from one side only. He gave a talk one night that's in the Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. We spoke about the man who walks around like a carpenter, carrying a board, long board, thick long board on his shoulder, and can't see over there. Can only see things from one side. So he said, when you only see things from one side, you're like a man spending life carrying a board. He mentioned that a number of times. So his meaning, and the meaning of our practice, is that everybody is already special. When we see things from all sides, which is to say, when there are no sides. So we are not special in a one-sided way, in a comparative way, in a dualistic way. So in our practice, we get beyond the feeling of I am more special than you. That's very dualistic. Or you are more special than him. This is seeing things dualistically. We are special in a way beyond that. We are special through our practice. We are not special because we are better than. Better than means we see things only in the relative sense. So, everyone, all of us, everyone everywhere is special in the large universal sense. And we don't need to say so. There's no need to say so. So we say, I'm a grain of sand. I'm just somebody. We don't need to say I'm special. You're special, I am special. All things are special. No one is special. Everyone is a grain of sand. And everyone is a somebody, equally. It is when we do not feel special in the universal sense that we strive very hard to feel special in the small sense, known as small mind. But that can be a useful thing if we work hard to be special in the everyday sense. It can make us creative. Provide leadership. It can help improve lives, enrich the lives of others. So if we are successful in our everyday pursuit of feeling special, we feel good. But that feeling is temporary. You know, society likes that. We want special people to lead us. That feeling is temporary. And that feeling fades. And because it is temporary, we strive some more to feel special. So our striving will continue indefinitely. Striving on the quest to feel special. And so no matter how successful we may be to obtain a feeling of specialness, we're still a hungry ghost, never satisfied. On the other hand, if our striving for success, if our striving to be special is not successful, then we become unhappy. Then we have problems, and then there is suffering. Suffering for ourselves and suffering from others. If we never obtain the feeling of specialness that we so desperately want, we become sad, we become angry, we start to mistrust other people. We might even betray other people who we think are obtaining the specialness that we want. It's a big problem. Creating competition and harm. It is actually the source of all of our karma, this quest for specialness. So, to attach to the idea of being successful in the everyday or the relative sense is a problem of ego. Who is it that wants to be special? And what makes it so complicated is this need to feel special relies on other people to fulfill it for us. We won't feel special in the everyday sense unless the rest of the world tells us, personally or in the media or somehow. We need other people to tell us we are special if we strive for it in the small sense. And that striving and that reliance on other people to tell us we're special will distort our relationship. Distorts relationships. because we will say, this person is more important than other people because his attention will make me feel special. And no matter what the rest of you say, it won't make me feel special. Only this, only him. So it will distort our relationships. So if we single out certain few people who we feel will make us feel special, we will treat them with great courtesy. We will treat them with great respect. We may even treat them with reverence. But all the others, you know, we treat them with indifference. Maybe even cruelty, because they can't give us what we want. When we have this kind of attitude, we will never feel special for very long. We can only wind up feeling anxious and separate. And the ego suffers. The ego says, well, I don't feel special. I don't know how to get the feeling. Nothing I do gives me a feeling of specialness. But if we can say, everything I do makes me feel special. Everyone I know is special and makes me feel special. Even doing nothing, I know I'm special in the large sense. Even if nobody says so, that feeling is there. When we have that feeling, then we are beyond the ideas of special or not special, and we treat everyone and everything with respect. Like Suzuki Roshi said in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, when he was talking about bowing, which is an expression of respect, he says, sometimes we even bow to cats and dogs. Meaning, we don't just bow to certain people who make us feel good or make us feel special. How we feel in our daily life, how we feel in the relative senses, is not so important. What is important is to completely understand that to live life free from ideas of our own specialness is enough. To be free from ideas of our own specialness is all we need. Then we are special in the very large sense. And then there is no problem. Everyone and everything is special, and we are all part of that. Knowing that, we will feel complete and we will feel stable. And when we see the specialness of each activity, no matter how small we may say it is, then we are free from the desire to be special. So, you are not special. you are not special. But at the same time, you are not not special. So it's a mistake for us to categorize ourselves as special or not special. Our true nature is beyond categories. I think most people, many people, will come to this practice because they don't feel special. And they hope that somehow practice will make them feel special. They come to practice because they don't feel special and they feel they cannot fill that craving by striving for success in the activities of daily life. Maybe they feel they don't have confidence in their capacity to succeed. Or maybe they feel that striving for success is not the way to go. And they want to practice to find out the way to go. But it makes no difference why we come to practice. We don't need to say, this reason is very pure, this reason is not so pure. We don't do that. No, it makes no difference why we come to practice. The important point is that we learn to see our life from all sides. From the standpoint of the everyday relative world of special and not special, the dualistic world, and also from the standpoint of the absolute world of nothing special. So, through our practice, we hope we can let go of ideas such as our own specialness or of anybody else's specialness and just learn how to express the universal specialness. Whether or not others admire us and call us special makes no difference. Just express the universal specialness. And then we will be very happy to be a grain of sand and nothing special. And then there will be no more hungry ghost. Does anyone have a question? Oh, yes, Scott.
When I think of a great artist like Monet, I'm wondering, is that kind of art like an attempt to be special, or is Monet like showing us a way to see the world and is in that way not attempting to be special but is showing us and says something special about the world?
I think that's right. A true artist doesn't care about being special. They see the world, they have a vision of the world, and they feel the need to express it and to be creative and at the same time help us see that same vision. So I think an artist like that is not trying to be special. There are some who are trying to be special, but the great ones are unselfish in that way. Thank you. Yes.
So how do you do things without ego? So you have a daily job or something, you have to fulfill your duties. How do you do it, without kind of like a competitive or...
It starts with each of us when we feel that pushing the ego is a misunderstanding and creates problems. And we want to learn how to be in the world without pushing our ego. And so we are trying to learn in this practice in this country, which is only a few years, 50 years, we're trying to learn how to have this practice in the situation that you describe, where we're told it has to be competitive, and we have to win. So how to do that without ego? It's a big question, and we are learning how to do that. And we are all optimistic that it can be done, that we can learn how to be competitive, exchange ideas without friction, move ahead in progress without being overwhelmed by personal ego. We're trying to answer your question. This is what we're doing. Come back in 100 years, we may have a better answer. It's a slow process. But it starts with our own understanding that aggressiveness, the aggressive ego, is not the way to go. That does not satisfy my life. When we have that feeling, then we've made a good start. Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you for your talk. This ego, affliction of ego, actually, I personally, about maybe 2 to 3 years ago, went through a very bad phase exactly with this, what you described, which is so common all around, every personal ego, collective ego, our company is better than your company, your country is worthless, our religion, your whatever. There was a old, somewhat relatively old movie from the May, it was about William Hurst, I think. He was like the Ted Turner or Rupert Murdoch of his day. There's a Hearst castle he has built with his show of a massive ego. I think it was called Citizen Kane. I found very interesting, basically, just the way it portrayed his desire and ego and wanting to be appreciated with the complete emptiness. And not the kind of emptiness that we maybe describe in the Heart Sutra, but basically just left like a very empty feeling watching that movie. And maybe probably there are some other works, but just found it very interesting to watch it. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, excuse me.
Thank you, Les. When I've gotten in a situation where I feel like I'm in a competitive environment, what's helped me at times is to think of excellence as opposed to specialness. I can achieve excellence without being better than someone. I can drive myself to achieve for others, or even for the satisfaction of knowing I've done my best, without thinking I therefore am better than the other people. I can even run a race with someone and beat them in the race and not consider myself better. So I think there are situations where competition actually drives us to achieve more, if we don't get lost in that sense of I'm worth less or I'm worth more. And that's I found that helpful in work environment and relationships in general.
Thank you. Oh, yes, please.
You brought up a good point of work, competitiveness. A very common thing I see is some people who are very skillful, everybody wants to feel appreciated in terms of increasing salary. Some people want a title. Some people want something out of the performance reviews. And I have seen if they don't feel appreciated, then they start saying, I'm going to boycott the meetings, I'm going to not be part of celebration because I don't feel appreciated. We can see that eventually what happens is they turn out to be angry people in the group. So people who are not just, you know, colleagues, they want help. This person would help before, be nice, be cheerful, but now this person is angry and having this attitude of, I'm not going to help anyone. I don't feel appreciated. What do I get? I could never explain what is wrong in it. And I used to see this, I think, disturbed that what a wonderful person you were. And for the want of feeling special or appreciated, that's fine to a certain extent, but now become a person who is angry at everyone and not a pleasant person. I don't know how to explain it, but I think today's talk really explains it. Because at work, there is always, if I don't feel special, if I am not appreciated, I'm not going to care about anything. And I really don't know how to improve this feeling, because we have a lot of angry people at work.
Part of our process of learning how to see everything without limits, and to see that everything is special. Part of that process is learning how to not feel overwhelmed when other people are trying to feel special, when other people are not acknowledging something you do because they feel that will make you look special and maybe diminish them, and they have this confusion. Not to let that upset us, not to be overwhelmed by that, but to stay clear on what we're trying to do. It's hard these days in this environment where being special is such a big deal in this culture. I keep hearing stories about the high school, young people who are going to graduate high school and wanting to go to different colleges, and the colleges of their choice, the good ones, are saying, you have to show us how special you are, or you can't get in. You have to show us how unique you are, or you can't get in. So we're putting that idea of individual specialness on our children when they're young. And we could have a weekend workshop talking about that. Because I think it's a problem, and there's no easy answer. But it's in the culture, and we have to find ways not to let it overwhelm us. Oh, Lee.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because while you were speaking about the specialness, I kept feeling and wondering, you know, how do we, when we're dealing with children, say as teachers or as parents, how do we help them to know their own capabilities and specialness without allowing it to get out of hand for them? You know, how do you praise a child? And I remember reading a book once that said, you don't say to a child, you know, oh, you're so smart. You say, I really like how hard you worked on that project. You did a really good job. You know, and so that they're not afraid of not being special again.
Mm.
You know, that they received this compliment because they did something.
Yes.
And then you look at what this culture does to certain kids if they happen to be taken up by the entertainment industry.
Mm.
And you see somebody who from childhood has been told, oh, you're wonderful, you're so special. And it just wrecks their personalities, you know. We can all think of a few, I'm sure, you know, of these people. And in a way, it's the worst possible thing that could have happened to them, is to have everybody love them from the time they were 10 years old, you know, because they have no concept of what it is to be a true adult in the world when they get to the age of adulthood. So it's a really excellent thing to think about.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Umar.
Yes, thank you for the talk. I was thinking of that story that Joseph Campbell once told about this. There was this king of the world who was going around making these huge castles everywhere, and each castle was bigger and brighter and shinier than the other, and he didn't even have time for his wife. So his wife went to God and said, you know, he doesn't have time for me. All he does is build castles. All he thinks about is building castles. So, okay. God said, I'm going to send a special wise man to you. And so the wise man came in, knocked on the door, and said, who is it? He said, well, I've come to see the king. And he said, well, the king is busy building the castle. He doesn't have time to see you. So he said, okay, I'll wait. So he waited for 10 days, and the king had a little bit of time. So he talked to the wise man and said, I know who you are, and I've been sent by somebody who's important, and said, you know, what you're doing is important, but it's not important. So what do you mean? So there was a trail of ants going through the door, through this huge door of the big castle. And he said, see these ants? I said, yeah. He said, they were kings of the world like you are right now before you. So he gave up building castles and left things as they were and started spending more time with his wife and living a regular life.
Thank you. Yes, please.
The situation then It's a question of priority, and his wife is a special person. If you don't have anybody special, how we can get married?
Yes, please.
Thank you for the talk. On the other side of the, you know, kind of child actors and things, there are a lot of people who kind of never feel special in the small sense, or never get to kind of win in the sense that our society is so competitive. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, our practice is to try not to see things that way and see everyone as special in the large way. What do we have? What kind of duty, or at least service, can we have toward the people who never get to be special in the small sense? Oh.
Let them know that you see them as special. Not because of some accomplishment or some home run or success, but simply because of who they are. And like the example Lee gave, if somebody does something, you acknowledge it and say, "That's, I really like that. That's very nice. That's, I can use that. That makes me feel good. Thank you." That acknowledges their capacity to make other people happy. And that's very powerful. And to acknowledge in other ways, like, "Would you like to have a cup of tea?" Small thing, but very powerful. Thank you. Bonnie.
So I volunteer with youth at risk, and we who come from very difficult families, and we see a lot of this where, and actually it, they do have a sense of being special. It's an inverted sense of being special. It's my fault. My parents are getting divorced. I'm not good enough. I'm the cause of all the world's problems. I'm the biggest disappointment ever. I'll never be good. You know, I'm an outlaw. I can never fit in. All these things. So they have, they're special, but in a very, very bad way. And that's just as destructive, if not more so. You know, they cut themselves. They don't. Eating disorders, all these things. And yeah, I found that, you know, we just encourage them in what they're doing, and we ask them things like, "What have you done that you're proud of?" And it's about seeing both sides of things. So some people think, "I'm the greatest," and they don't see where they're failing. Well, these kids see all their failures, and they don't see their successes. So by seeing their successes, then it balances out, and even just spending time with them, they get, "I'm worth spending time with," you know? And like the power of working in these groups is, you know, everyone's vulnerable and open, and they get to see and cheer on each other as, you know, they have accomplishments. And so they get, "I'm special, but everyone else is special too," you know? And so it's really powerful.
Thank you. Yes, Hernan.
We have an almost 11-year-old daughter, fifth grade. This is the weeks that they keep. There were two awards. One was an award for a Sultan Award for people that get along and are hired by people. And there were two awards. Two girls got it. And a friend of my daughter came and said, "Oh, you know what? I think that you should have gotten that award. I think that you have helped me and others more than the others," which made her feel strange and something that he never thought before. And she got home and she said, "Oh, Mom, that award that you told me that I should have got it, but I didn't get it." And it was very surprising to see a 10-year-old thinking about the things. Then next week, this week, came the academic awards, and she got one of the two academic awards. And she felt kind of good. So my wife asked her, "What do you think about the awards?" And her answer was very interesting. She said, "I don't like them, because we are 40 in the class. What happened with all the girls that don't get awards?"
Thank you. Oh, when can we meet your daughter? When do we meet her? Thank you. Columbine?
That was sort of my question in a way. When you have a child and you say, like, good job, and you show them encouragement, are you somehow setting up an expectation? Like, obviously, when somebody says good job, you feel good, right? So it's almost like it's like a drug, kind of, in a sense, because you want that feeling. So are we just kind of setting up a yearning for that continually by providing it?
I think when children are young, they need to know that their efforts are appreciated. If they don't get some kind of acknowledgement for their efforts, they may develop an attitude of, "Oh, what's the use? Nobody notices." So we have to give them something when they're young. And as they mature, we don't have to worry about it so much. When they're 10 years old, like Hernan's daughter, they don't care about it anymore. But I think in the beginning, with little ones, we have to give them some kind of acknowledgement. So it's like Hernan's daughter is really saying, that award stuff is for the little kids. So I do. Interesting questions. Thank you.